I knew I had to follow Shapeshifter, so I brought in some Baraka tablets if you need that little boost to get you through. All right. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. So my name's Keith, as the thing says. So I've been in IT for about 12 years now across New Zealand, Australia, and the U.S., mostly as a Microsoft generalist. But a few years back, I decided I can see as Link 2010 was rolling out, I can see that it was kind of going to become this next big thing. So I decided I would make a switch and exclusively focus on Link at the time. So and then over time became one of the leading enterprise voice experts in New Zealand. So it's all going well. So about 2.5 years ago, I decided I would leave the big larger corporates and look for a company that's focusing almost exclusively on Link, or now Skype for Business. So I came to UCFX about 2.5 years ago because they seemed to share the passion that I had for it. So I finally decided I'd better sit down and take my Link exams, and that's gone well. And then just earlier this year was named a P-seller for Unified Communications for Microsoft. So that's formerly the VTSP program. So building up a great team of guys within the company, we've kind of positioned ourselves pretty well, I think. So I'll jump right into what we're going to talk about, and I'm going to take you through a walkthrough of a major government project that we recently finished up. So we'll just jump right into that. So early last year, I was brought into to lead a team to help design and deliver a large voice platform for a major government agency. And the team was made up of some of my colleagues from our professional services team and several members of one of our large partners. And they brought us in. They needed that enterprise voice experience because we could tell it was going to start to get complex very quickly. So the project involved moving the customer from an old, long-standing Cisco system that they'd had, and try to move them onto what's now Skype for Business, enterprise voice platform. So then they wanted things like contact center connectivity, and then we found out, oh, they got this whole raft of analog devices. So I was like, great. So the project kicks off. And other than some teething issues, we find out, yep, we got a great team. We can do all that for you. You want voice migrations? Yeah, I've done that. Yep. And then we sign it all off. Statements of work go well. And then we'll fast forward to the very end where everything was great. You have a company party, made a bunch of new friends, have some drinks. Everything was great. But obviously what you guys want to hear about is the fun part in the middle. I decided I would just keep this at a level 200. I don't really want to give all my secrets away. But feel free to ask me questions. I'm happy to share how a lot of that goes through. So despite many of the sleepless nights that this project caused at the end, it was quite successful, and I'll go through some of those stats when we get there. So while trying to come up with the slide, probably the biggest thing I want you to take away is and the biggest thing I learned is that when you start to get in these big projects, you've really got to build your team, and you've really got to trust that team to deliver in the areas that they specialize in. So like many of my peers, I started out in the Microsoft UC space as the lone wolf of the company. So the one guy who did the voice pieces, so he was always the guy who had to go and do the pre-sales and the design and the delivery and even onto the support. And so I constantly just relied on myself, and I developed my way of doing things, and of course, like every IT guy, my way is the best way. And so it was sometimes hard to try to rely on other people to do things, because I always felt I can do it better. And one of the things this project showed me is sometimes it's a whole lot easier just to let the right people do their job. So as the uptake of Skype for Business soared, I had to build up this specialist team to help address a number of the challenging issues in some of these larger deployments. And so as an example, one of my colleagues, or former colleagues now, he's decided to rush off to Germany for a big project, became quite a key person in an unexpected way. He was wanting to get into the Skype for Business space, but Well, he was, on top of being a Canadian, he was also a Cisco guy. So myself as an American, we kind of joke often about that. So I'll get into more of how he was helpful as well. But the big thing is that you need to be able to rely on the right people as you work through discovery. So what we did is we teamed up our Skype for Business engineers with a business person from the agency, and they worked closely together as they went through and discovered, because our guys knew all the technical terms, they knew what they wanted to do, but their business, they knew how to talk to the right people, what random cubbyhole cabinet things were stored in that we would have never discovered on our own. So when it comes to big deployments, communications are key. And so same thing, we got our contact center agents, because they speak the lingo and they understand a lot of what customers want. And we paired them up with some contact center people from their team as well. So so that went well, and we were able to get the right communications out. And then it comes down to using the right tools and getting the right people who know how to use those tools. We had to get in our contact center experts, infrastructure experts, those sorts of things, and of course enterprise voice experts. And then use them appropriately with what they had. So one of the things I learned going from being the lone wolf to leading a team of people is that everybody's got a special skill area in this big wide range, and picking out who is the best to put into what. So it was good learning for me as well. So just getting started, we did have a few, as I said, teething issues, challenges that we had to work through. That was, the big thing is that this was a partner-led engagement. So most of our deployments, we like to lead ourselves, and we do. And even when we go in with a partner, the partner introduces us, and then we take it from there. This one was actually led by the partner. And so the first interesting thing that we ran is, we were the third party, as opposed to the delivery agent. So, whereas the partner was trusted within the organization, initially we were not. So, and we missed out on a lot of those initial meetings, and we found that not all the right details had passed down to us. So, we made sure that myself or our BDM were at least at those meetings, so that we didn't kind of lose traction on that. So, getting all that in place, we finally kind of close the loop and starting to build a nice team together. So after that, we found that through the first 6 months, both ourselves, our partner, and the staff within the government agency were all, people were changing hands. And as you get into some of these big projects, people leave, people change positions, change roles, those sorts of things. So we found ourselves kind of losing the notes that people took. So we're like, so what did you say in the meeting, or who said what, and you wanted what requirement, what needed to be delivered? And so that got kind of frustrating at the beginning of the project. So I don't know if you guys know, but within SharePoint, we didn't know this, or I didn't know this, is you can actually use OneNote within SharePoint and dedicate that to the customer folder. So we created the customer folder where we normally just threw all our design documents and everything in there. But we actually realized we can just use OneNote, and it's quite easy just to open the OneNote from there, sync it to your tablet, so everybody on the project team has access to the same set of notes and they never get lost. And so that was kind of one of our key findings that kind of helped us to keep that into control as well. So, and then, of course, every good large project starts with some very unclear requirements. I'd say starting with requirements start, but at least this one had a brief start. But you always get this, I want bigger, better, faster, stronger, except I don't want to interrupt my users. So can you just kind of make it like for like? Well, you want bigger, better, stronger, faster, and you want like for like. Well, that doesn't really work these days. So to me, I had my daughter, who's three, try to write me some requirements, and that's kind of what I feel like our requirements are when we get these from people. So so we spent a lot of time at the beginning going through everything they liked about their current platform, everything they didn't like about their current platform. And you know, as as many of you who might have been involved in migrations or changing of PBXs, you might know that there's almost never a like for like when you're dealing with existing PBXs and Skype for Business. So we just kind of had to work with them to develop what it is that Skype can do to help meet some of those requirements. And what we found is there were going to be a bunch of frustrating changes for people who weren't going to like the way Skype does things. One of the big things we ran into is, well, my phone can ring this way, but Skype for Business doesn't set those personal rings like that, you know, or my phone does this and this that and the other. So we ended up finally getting some agreement. Yeah, some things are going to have to change. It's a whole new world. It's a software based system basically. So, but we were able to work through that. So getting past that first part, getting past the at least a relatively decent set of requirements, we moved finally into the design and discovery stages. So now that the team's starting to mesh, let's get into our project. So the discovery and design phase highlighted a few more things that we were going to face. And as I mentioned earlier, they wanted a like-for-like deployment in the beginning. So I'm sure many of you know Cisco, Skype for Business, very, very different. And so comparing what they both offered and how we were able to design that was a bit of a task. You know, things like the way hunt groups work within Call Manager don't work the way response groups work within Skype for Business. And we can achieve a lot of the same things, but there were certain call flows that we had to work with them continuously to redesign how those call flows worked. But luckily, we had the right people on our team. As I mentioned, we had a former Cisco guy who was able to kind of help kind of bring a lot of that together and talk about how he knew that it would get done in Cisco, and we were able to twist that. So, wrong button. And then, on top of dealing with Cisco, at some point in the past, somebody went in and delivered a Link 2013 deployment, just standard edition, set it in there just to get them IAMP and try to get things rolling. So we had to work around how do we get that that standard edition deployment and how do we move from that. So the first thing was, oh, well, we'll just stand it up in the data center and we'll just shift your users across. Everything's all great. But actually, we want a different data center. Okay, well, we'll shift it to a different data center and then we'll move people across. Well, the data center's not ready, so let's build it in the DR data center in Auckland. All right, great. So now we have a starting point. How many of you know what happened to Link in the middle of last year? That's right. The whole rebranding exercise. So right in the middle of the project, we haven't reached the sign-offs of design stage yet. So we were able to go back and look at the differences between what Link offered, what Skype offered, and no one really wants to start on the back foot when you're already when you're already looking to deploy the latest. So lucky for us, it happened early enough on, and we were able to kind of tweak all of our documentation, explain to the customer what changes were, what things were available. Some of the hitches we found were that Skype requirements were somewhat unclear for certified devices when it first came out. So we went with the assumption, which turned out to be correct, that if it was supported for Link 2013, it was going to work on Skype for Business. And so for the most part, that was good, except we had one little former Polycom unit that went off the list, and then it was on the list, and then it was off the list. But by the time we got to sign off the design, it was back on the list again. So we were able to keep that and not spend a few thousand extra to replace that. So on top of the Link infrastructure, so as I mentioned, they had an existing call manager that had been there and hadn't been updated in quite a while, because the customer decided a number of years ago that they were going to move into a Microsoft UC-based solution. So what did they do? They stopped all funding and money to upgrade the Cisco environment. So Normally, when I deal with the projects, I'm like, yeah, great. So we'll put in an SBC. We'll connect your call manager to it. We'll plug in it. We'll buy E1 ports, or we'll connect it via SIP if it's supported. However, they didn't want to spend any money on the system, so there were no spare E1 ports, so I couldn't plug it in that way. It didn't support SIP the way most modern devices support SIP. So we were at this kind of crossroads. How do we get it to connect? And the things we had to also consider around that system is there were several ISDN lines across the country plugging into multiple regions. So I'm not sure how much you guys might know about the complexities of ISDN lines versus the simplicities of SIP lines. But we couldn't just consolidate everybody's number on a single ISDN line because they're kind of regionally locked, unless you want to pay telcos a lot of money, which anybody who works for a telco probably thinks that's a great idea. So what we had to do and what we had to come up with is how we connect that old system and the old world as I have it, how we connect that old world into our brand new Skype for Business deployment with an SBC, right? You should always use an SBC. They save yourselves a lot of trouble. So how do we get that old system to connect into our new system? So generally, when people talk, you know, how do I maintain that coexistence? Well, the session border controller, you know, we use, so for this customer, we use audio codes. You can use Sonos, whatever flavor you're comfortable with. But how do we get that? And so, so remember I mentioned this former Cisco Canadian guy who I generally wouldn't put in such a big project. Well, I got to talking with him around how we can get calls from our old environment onto our new environment. And so what we came out with is that we can basically build a couple of virtual Cisco devices that are running the modern firmware, so 10 dot something. That's why he's the Cisco guy. So we can run a virtual edition of Call Manager 10, and we were able to put that on our stack, our virtual stack that's running everything else, and actually successfully talk back and forth between the Skype for Business environment and the old Cisco Call Manager 7.1 environment that they had. And so now we were actually finally to the point where we can seamlessly pass calls between the old and the new platform. And so we designed all that out. It took quite a lot of talks between us, between the manager of their the team that managed the old Cisco environment, getting them all to the point where they can speak the same language. So that device kind of became our Rosetta Stone of the deployment. So then it was time for the actual deployment. So we build all that up. We go through. We get the licensing, all that sort of stuff to get that in place. And then I had to think about what do I do with all those analog devices as well. So they're all running. Cisco ATAs across the board, and generally you wouldn't plug the Cisco ATAs, but I got to thinking, back in my Asterix days, long gone thankfully, I used to take these old Cisco phones and we'd flash them with generic SIP firmware, and we'd register them to, you know, whatever it is, Asterix at the time. So I thought, well, you know, we can look at the ATAs. Turns out the ATAs have that same capability, so we were able to look at flashing them and getting them to register. So that allowed us to kind of develop a good strategy of how we start shifting things from one to the other. The ATAs are relatively dumb, so as long as we can register the number on the New World side, we could just shift those and nobody would ever notice, and it was great. So we developed the strategy of shifting the voice services now all the way across to the new Skype for Business platform that we had built. So all of the calls now come through this primary SIP trunk into the new SBCs we put in, traverse the session manager, call manager, and passed through the old environment, and everything was great. So we started shifting ATAs across. Nobody really noticed, and everything was good. So it was time for the deployment. And so the two biggest challenges that we had during our deployment was probably going to sound very familiar, changing requirements and scope creep. And so my favorite analogy, because I do like them, is we want you to build this wall. Okay, yep, I'll build the wall. We'll get started building. Can you make it a little bit bigger, a little bit wider? Go ahead and add some steps. Well, next thing you know, we've got this very massive wall. And so that's kind of what it felt like going through this is, yep, so we want like for like, well, we'll give you these. Oh, Link can do that. Can you do this? Oh, can you add this in? You know, how about these common area phones? And let's replace these devices and room systems. Yeah, that's great. So next thing you know, we said, we'll do this. And it's, yeah. So so a lot of the issues that we found in this was caused because when we tried to do an audit across this customer, there was something in the ballpark of 35 different branch sites, and plagued by mergers in the past, and so we kept finding all these new things as we continued on down, and we'd find a customer said, "Yeah, we've only got two phone lines here. We don't need anything." Great, we plug, you know, set them up with two phones. We walk down there and see how things are going. Yeah, but this phone in the corner is never ringing. Oh, what phone in the corner? Oh, you said two phones. So we're constantly finding all these new details. The more we dug, and so we'd go back and we'd have to do all these reconfigurations on the SBCs and the Skype environment, and then finally we've come up with a lot of learnings on that. And so what we do to try to eliminate some of these changing things is we get all of this, all of these audit sheets and everything. We remove all the customer details, zip everything up into one big zip, and every time we bring a new customer on, we just dump those into SharePoint. So every new customer starts off with the same stack of information, so we can go and make sure that we found all the right stuff. So our deployment phase brought in its challenges as well. And as I mentioned very early on, the biggest challenge that we had was the fact that we were a partner of a partner. And so when you're the third party and you're coming into a project like this, just because the partner has all the access rights and everything that you need doesn't mean you're going to get those as well. So we had to kind of rethink about how we request rights and what the lowest set of rights we can be happy with, and even that became quite challenging because Skype for Business is a product that's natively built into Microsoft products. It built into everything, so it integrates and it touches everything, and it affects your network, it affects your Active Directory, it affects your DNS, it affects your DHCP. It affects your internal PKI, your SQL servers, your Exchange environment, everything. And so trying to get all the rights to be able to control and move all these parts became quite a challenge. And so we had to really work on how we worked as a team with the partners. What we found is that as much as it frustrated us, it was a whole lot easier to work with our partner and to get them to do the things we needed to. So we kind of had to relax our, you know, this is my IP, I don't want to share it, I don't want to tell you how to do things. We kind of had to relax that because it's a whole lot easier dealing with your partner than it is dealing with security guys, especially in major government organizations. So we thought we'd pick the lighter battle. So we got the rights that we could do the majority of it, and then we'd come and work with our partner to get them to run those final bits with those admin rights and the topology publishing and things that we couldn't do natively. So the big thing that I learned the hard way is that we have to trust our partner as well. So it goes back to trusting the people on your team to do the right thing. And as I said, that's a whole lot easier than trying to butt heads with the security team to tell them, look, I really need this. I can't do it without this. Well, that just became an ongoing thing. So we thought, well, all right, so here we go. We'll talk with the partner. We'll get them. We'll sit with them. We'll get them to run the commands. All was good. And in the end, it ended up working out well. So we were able to move on and iron out all these extra requirements that got thrown in and test. And then it was time for the best part, the testing, the transition and the migration stages. So once everything was signed off, we're given by the okay by the customer, by the telcos, by the vendors, and ready to start putting live users on the system. And so we did that from a site-by-site approach. So it's all in, SPCs are up, call manager calls are passing through. So we had to go back and look at what we do with those analog devices. As I mentioned earlier, we were successfully able to put a generic firmware on them, which was good because we quoted them somewhere in the ballpark of it's like $150 or $200 per SBA or per ATA that we were going to have to replace. There were about 300 of them across the organization nationwide, and so in doing so, we were actually able to reuse all these old ATAs, let them kind of sweat that investment a little while longer, and save them, I can't remember what's said in the ballpark, of about $45,000 off of that. So we were able to use those, register them to the SBCs, provide the same level of service that they would have had in the past. So, and able to essentially pre-migrate them before we started even migrating the sites, which meant a site migration was a lot easier because we could focus on the user migrations and not focus on the those printer, copier, fax, multifunction devices, which were not a lot of fun. So we were able to get those done underway. We were able to do the migration. We used and created a number of PowerShell scripts that kind of pretty much automated every site deployment after that. So keeping in theme with my recycling theme, we were able to just basically reuse a batch file every time we had a site. And so when you're having to migrate 35 sites, the first few, not as much fun, but everything after that, I just was able to leave the engineers to, you know, here's your list of users, here's your response groups, here's your call pickup groups, and just dump them into Excel spreadsheets, run the scripts, and able to keep that moving through pretty well. So the remaining 30 some odd sites went a whole lot smoother, which was good. So, So in the end, despite all the fun issues that we had a pretty successful project, and some good stats. So we had about 2,500 users who we successfully moved relatively painlessly from an old Cisco call manager onto Enterprise Voice and Skype for Business. There were probably about another 1,000 who were just IMNP. IMNP is great because it's easy. Nobody really notices when you move them across. Moved across 35 sites. We were able to provide federation. So they operated, as any government agency probably would, a closed federation. So we were able to set up all the federation components, and they were able to interact with agencies like they hadn't been able to in the past, which was great. We were able to provide contact center integration. So we used a Skype-supported contact center to put in. That was IPFX Contact Center. That's one of our sister companies, which made it a whole lot easier. But we were able to get that in. You can achieve the same thing with ZCOM. We've worked with them in the past as well. So. And then able to reuse those 300 some odd analog devices, which saved them a lot of money. And the most important win of the project was that the Cisco platform was able to be shut off, removed, thrown in the bin. So the big thing that I learned from it is that when you build the right team, you need to be able to trust your team, and so trust your team to do the work. So it's relatively short. So it gives us plenty of time for Q&A. guys are still awake to answer it. There's Baraka that'll help. And if you have any other questions that we can't answer here, I've thrown my email address up. Feel free to send me some questions. So, any questions? All right. So Skype for Business, so you're talking about the likes of Cloud PBX. So as it currently stands, you can use it now through the use of an SBC, and either if you've already got an on-premise solution, you can use your on-premise solution, or you can use the Cloud Connector Edition. So those all still work. Obviously, there's a lot of things that you have to consider. It's not a silver bullet approach. But you can still make use of that. So if you're a company who relies a lot on PSTN calling, it'll still work because all of your calling stays local, right? So it'll go out that local SIP trunk. So sorry, I didn't actually repeat the question, but the question was when is the ability to make PSTN calling in Skype for Business Online available? So as a general PSTN calling, you can do that now through the use of an SBC with either Cloud Connector Edition or your on-premise Skype for Business or Link 2013 deployment. Skype for Business, so the question is, have I seen many deployments with Skype for Business in call centers? Yep, several. It's easiest if you work with a call center that's certified to work on Skype for Business. So there's a special way that you build that into Skype for Business. Are you talking about on-premise or online? Because there's kind of a difference in that. So if we're talking on-premise, which is what I traditionally deal with, then it's easy. I've been doing that for years with ZCOM and now with IPFX. So when I started with UCFX, about 2.5 years ago, we started looking at how we can tweak their longstanding traditional contact center into Skype for Business. So we've worked with the developers and we're able to get that to register directly as well. But ZCOM's been doing that for a while. Interactive Intelligence has a good degree of integration, and Genesys as well, and those are probably the four prominent ones in New Zealand. Skype for Business Online's a whole other story. So at this point in time, it's not able to be connected directly into the Skype for Business Online platform. There are some things that you can do in the interim. So if you don't want to go and get a full on-premise Skype for Business deployment, but you still need that contact center capability, you can use some that might be loosely integrated through the use of the session border controllers. So those session border controllers add a great deal of smarts to even your Skype for Business Online deployment that you can't normally get through traditional PSTN calling out of Office 365. So the question is, do the call center platforms have call reporting, call recording? Yes, most of them do. Yep. So I know ZCOM can do it. IPFX Contact Center can do it. I haven't used Interactive Intelligence and Genesys enough to know, but no doubt most of them all have that capability, because once you have that SIP media stream, it's a whole lot easier to basically capture those packets and turn them into voice and store them. So, and then, of course, from that, there's some of the SBC providers as well, such as AudioCodes, offer products that plug into the SBC and will do the recording through the SBC. Again, lots of design and challenges around those sorts of things. What a lot of those require is one of the great things about Skype for Business is it tries to do most things with encrypted traffic. So you have to consider how those recording solutions are deployed, because they have to have the ability to decrypt that traffic so that they can turn it into voice and save it as a recording. Any other questions?
Through the
Yep. So some of those smarts, so I don't think it's been released yet, but it's said to be released later this year. Within Skype for Business Online, they're going to have, they don't call them response groups or call pickup groups like they have them, but they're kind of advanced, I can't remember, the advanced call control, that sort of thing. So you can actually do natively within that to create special response groups. But the other option is within SBCs, most of them have some sort of a forking option. So you can create a number, and when that number's rang, you can actually fork it out to as many people as you need to, basically due to the whatever limitations that has, but generally quite a high number of people you can fork it off to. The call forking piece, so that's built into the SBC, but the call routing piece, so that's last I saw was due by the end of the year, but that's kind of Microsoft timeline. Here's hoping by the end of the year it's supposed to be ready yet. So. That's right. So that's the PSTN calling side of that. Yep. So you'll still be able to make use. So when the advanced call routing functionality comes out, even in New Zealand without the preview of PSTN calling, you'll still be able to make use of that with the use of an SBC and Cloud Connector Edition. So you don't have to wait for the PSTN in the cloud calling capability to come out to be able to use that. Does that make sense? Yep. So you, well, until the PSTN calling comes out in New Zealand, you still need some form of SBC somewhere. Now, there are some providers that build that into, you can put that into a hosted environment because all it is, so the two biggest SBC vendors that I deal with, AudioCodes and Sonos, both of them have an SBC with the Cloud Connector Edition running inside the box. So it's just a whole set of VMs running inside the box. So you just have that little 1U piece of kit that can go into a hosted data center anywhere or into your own on-premise location if you so choose as well. So, but if you put that in a hosted platform, then yeah, you need internet, right? So, or a WAN connection back to that. Yeah. So there's a lot of, I mean, because you're dealing with real-time traffic, there's a lot of consideration you have to do, and that's why Microsoft has this big push over the past year or so to try to get a network assessment done before you start putting those in, because and now we work with a couple of vendors such as IR, who have a piece of software that'll run test across your network to the Skype for Business Online platform to tell you how good that experience is going to be. So, and I think some of those, they've even got some native ones to give you a rough idea as well, so that you can download. But yeah, the connectivity back to those, it's still a bit, it still requires a good bit of planning because, you know, for New Zealand, those Skype for Business Online locations are still, they're still mostly based out of Singapore, and I can't remember where the other leg of that is, but essentially around Singapore. So you still really have to take into consideration your internet traffic from here to there. So, because everything across the WAN, we can work on QoS profiling. If it's on premise, you can put in CAC, which isn't yet supported for online. But you can't do that for the internet. And ExpressRoute will give you the ability to QoS profile your traffic to the edge of Microsoft. So, be it in Sydney or in Singapore, but that gives you still edge connectivity capability, and it still just gets you QoS to that edge location. So, a whole lot better than going across the internet, but still, again, ExpressRoute, a lot of design considerations as well, because the big key thing that I've discovered is if you don't size it right, everything that goes above what you've guessed at is going to be your, I guess we call it your best effort traffic anyway. So your first many calls will be great, but any call after that might not get into that quaz queue. So a lot of planning to go around that as well. All right, any other questions? Great, thank you all for coming out. I enjoy the questions more than I enjoy the presentation, but thanks for all the questions. So don't forget to try to win the Surface Pro 4 or the Xbox. If you don't want the Xbox, feel free to give it to me. But thanks again for coming out.